Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 4 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, and Warhammer 40,000: The Valentine Heresy, as well as 4 event podcasts with mini-series releases at staggered intervals: Curse Code and Crown, Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back, children of the night, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am your host, Count Vlad von Lestat, drinker of blood, keeper of the chronicle, and all around a spooky dude. The Coterie are gearing up for Montreal's first Elysium in decades. Iris is reclaiming her identity alongside Emily in her apartment. Everett forced Ridley to take care of a situation where the Bear Boys kidnapped a police officer before they went shopping. And Ridley pretended to be a movie producer to get Kyle Minogue to create more bullets for the Coterie and special vampire-killing gloves for Ridley. What horrors await them all at Elysium? Abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
Ridley and Everett, you are headed to meet the vampire hunter Jocelyn St. James with the incredibly, incredibly accurate and consistent Australian accent. Now, when you're listening to this, you're probably thinking, I don't know, his accent sure is drifting. Incorrect. That's just a fault of the audio medium. What you are hearing is a flawless Australian accent because she is from Australia and her accent is flawless. Having put in your order at Iris's condo for your punchy stabby glove and having determined your outfits, you are off to meet up with Jocelyn to try and ascertain kind of what her deal is, what her objectives are. Everett, obviously, you've been kind of like stalked in a way by her for a bit. First showing up when you went to meet Mr. Ken for information, later seemingly saving you from the squad car mishap after that baby you borrowed. And now the time has come for some answers. So the two of you are going to meet her. Is there anything you discuss on the way over? Are you kind of trying to come up with like a unified plan, or like what's going on?
I think maybe just a quick review of like etiquette in terms of let's try not to kill her.
Well, what if we need to though? Like, when does it become okay? We fucking offer. Like, what if her problem is fuck all vampires? Well, we're vampires, so that's a fucking bad deal.
See, I think that's just not the case because she could have just burnt us up in the club with the rest of the vampires if her view was fuck all vampires.
See, this
is why... don't want anyone to fly off the handle here.
See, this is why you're the detective, because you're putting all the pieces together and I'm paranoid. Okay, so we don't need to go in guns blazing, but, I mean, I don't even know why the fuck we're going. So we're going to meet her. What do you want from her?
Information. She puzzles me. It's an odd thing, you know, for us to be rescued by a vampire hunter. She wants us for a job, and we don't have those details yet, so...
All right, we got this fucking Drek we should ask about. Maybe she knows about that. Okay. Fuck it, yeah, all right. I'll let you take the lead. I'll be here. If you fucking need someone to do the old rippy gutsies, maybe there should be a signal. What would you want to say pocket. So I know fucking rippy gutsies?
When Ridley says like rippy gutsies, it's not a judgment on Ridley personally, but the thing that does come to mind is like a wild dog just like tearing something apart. So Everett just says, sick 'em.
Oh, that's fucking good. That's good. Also, I don't think you'd say that by accident, which is the real key to these things. Otherwise, you know, at one time I knew a fucking guy who said, throw down if I say happy birthday. And he took me to a fucking birthday party. It was the worst. That kid will never forget. He was only four.
That seems incredibly careless.
Yeah, don't worry. I hurt the guy, but only in the closet. I made sure the kid couldn't see. You don't want to mess with children. One could say it's one of my, I don't know, values, rules.
Right.
It's one of my convictions.
What an oddly specific phrase that surely has no mechanical value to you.
Nope, only about all British criminals talk about their convictions so much.
Yeah, I had convictions, but then I lost that page. So I'm just kind of a wild, wild man out here on the streets. So,
yeah, you've got touchstones, you know, as the person. Also very popular in British mobster circles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why all the Guy Ritchie films, they're constantly like, all right, here's the deal. Touchstones.
Everyone seems to have a friend in those fucking movies. I don't fucking get it. They could all make a lot of money if they just bought a gun.
So that's kind of where the conversation kind of goes off to other fun stuff. But it's basically like cool heads going in. We've got like a kill word, kill phrase if we need it. But we're here to listen. We're here to talk.
Great. Clear eyes, clear hearts, can't lose.
Yeah, the vampire code.
Yeah. Miles.
Clear eyes, no hearts, can't lose.
That's right.
Iris is having, as we've established, a pretty relaxing evening. So I don't want to fuck with the mythology we've already set up. I did want to ask, though, is there anything you think Iris would be doing other than just chilling out? We've established the bath is happening. The goal is to just not be bothered by anything. But, I mean, you know, you're hanging out in the tub. You've got your fresh squeezed blood martini. Do you think there's anything else you'd be doing, or would you literally just be taking a second to enjoy sweet, sweet freedom and the return of Emily?
I should probably be texting Emily dress options for her to go find.
What kind of outfit do you think Iris would be aiming for Elysium?
Like an Oscar-worthy gown.
Okay. Which, in broad strokes, what are you imagining that would... What kind of options do you think she'd be after? Because there's obviously a lot of different Oscar fashions, some of which are amazing, some of which are terrible. We talking like elegant classic Hollywood? Are we talking modern and thought-provoking? What's...
Yeah, definitely like elegant Hollywood. She wants to look beautiful without standing out, but like maybe with a couple of weird like options thrown in, like some of the geometric stuff that Cate Blanchett wears sometimes. It's kind of like still classy and beautiful, but just like a couple weird structural lines.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you to please roll me a... let's go with wits and etiquette. I'd give you etiquette or leadership.
Let's go etiquette. One success.
Okay. Given the short notice and the lack of Academy Awards season in the fair city of Montreal, your options are a little bit limited, but Emily is able to find you one good kind of classic, if somewhat understated, classic Hollywood outfit, and one kind of vaguely, not necessarily outrageous, but memorable outfit with... that's definitely a little bit more in your face about the design. Which of the two would you take?
What are the colors? Because that matters.
Okay. The out there one is, we'll say, like crimson. The classic Hollywood is black with gold trim.
Probably the more out there one. If okay. we're going, if it's red, then she's likely going to gravitate to that.
Okay, great. So you send that off to Emily, who, despite being still vaguely feral, is you know, an evening shopper. It's fine if Ridley and Everett can get away with it. I'm sure she can too. So she leaves to go sort that out, and you are left finally alone-ish, aside from the victims hanging up in the other room, in your condo. Meanwhile, you gentlemen, you pull up and you notice that Jocelyn's actually outside the location she'd recommend that you meet at, and is kind of like gesturing down an alley. It's Ridley, I think actually both you and Everett would recognize this as the look of someone who might be concerned that they've been made. So she just walks off down the alley, I think, if you guys can roll me a streetwise, please, with, I think, intelligence or composure.
Tom.
Yes, sir.
Because I haven't dealt with the darker side of these things before. I have three successes, but I also have two ones. Does that matter at all? Do they balance out successes, or is it only if you get no successes?
I think you have to fail the test in order to get bestial failures.
Okay, cool. Then I have three successes.
And I have two successes.
I'm just going to confirm that, though. One sec. Oh, of course, it's not in the index. I forgot which book I was looking at. Not going to confirm it.
The Keep useful book. The good book.
Storyteller. Yeah, storyteller ruling. That. Okay, great. So with those, I think, gentlemen, you would recognize the danger in just immediately following her if there seems to be some kind of concern that perhaps she's been made. So instead, you both start to make your way around the corner, to kind of try and find a different entrance in. So, making your way down a side alleyway, you find Jocelyn St. James, who you notice has somewhat dressed down for the occasion. She's not wearing, like, you know, the giant wide-brimmed hat. Her outfit is still very noticeable on the streets of Montreal, but she's clearly kind of tucked the hat away. You don't see, she's not like open carrying a crossbow or any shit. She does have kind of one of those heavy Australian raincoats that are kind of treated in that like a beeswax kind of treatment. So kind of a big slicker, essentially. And Everett, you can immediately pick up the jangle of weapons kind of inside the coat. But this does seem to be kind of her incognito. It's incognito in a Ninja Turtle wearing a fedora and a trench coat kind of way, in that, like, technically a disguise. You know, the striking silver hair definitely is a pretty dead giveaway. She smiles at both of you and says her catchphrase, Tom knows an accent line. Well, good day, mates. Sorry about having to give you all a run around. Come around the corner here. Just thought I saw some ne'er-do-well fellas back there. You know, after I killed them cops, they got a little bit of heat on me, eh?
Sure, sure. I understand. Everything all right then?
She just kind of shrugs and she's like, right, yeah, sure, let's go with that. Maybe we should keep walking though, eh?
Sure. And yeah, Everett will go.
Ridley, you do not hear your trigger phrase.
No, Ridley will just...
candidate for you today.
Ridley will just keep following along, just quietly in the back, watching the corners.
Everett will, like, give him a little, like, jab with his elbow and be like, well, she kills cops. Like, keep walking.
Yeah, the weird thing is that you're cool with it, you know? Like, I think that would bother you.
Oh, yeah, no, I had my whole, like, moment of processing that. I lived it. It was fucked up, and I have kind of putting on a face here, but...
Yeah, because you wouldn't really think that you'd be the one okay with the person who murdered the police officers and then planned to burn down a nightclub with everyone inside. You seem really troubled by that when it was us. But with her, it's cool?
It needs to be cool, if that makes sense.
I feel like you're a tremendously repressed man, you know? Like, I don't feel like you really just let your feelings out.
And Everett's face is, like, inscrutably neutral, and he just kind of says,
probably,
and then walks on.
Excellent. So the three of you kind of make your way down this this side alley, and eventually you come out into a small park is obviously it's nighttime, so it's not tremendously full, and you're able to kind of pull up a discreet sort of bench type area to kind of lurk near. With that, Jocelyn kind of looks around. You can see her shoulders relax a bit. She's like, right, I think we should be good here then.
Hello, Gov. It's your boy Ridley, and I'm here to talk to you about maybe a way you should be contributing to this little organisation. Everyone knows, as you look around, there's a lot of bear boys. And, you know, to be a bear boy, you got to be a bear, and you got to be, well, not exactly a boy, but you got... The important thing is, you got to pay your fucking dues, is what you got to do. And right now... I just know from looking at the numbers, there are a lot more fucking people out there than there are inside my fucking gang. And what I'm saying is, if you want to join up and get access to me and all the cool fucking toys and other fucking treats I've got for all you little bear boys and girls and theys and thems and fucking alls out there, go to patreon.com/dumdumdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. You do that. You're on the inside. Come talk to me on a Patreon-exclusive Discord. Why don't you throw some names into the show? Why don't you build an NPC to join my fucking gang? I'm just saying, if you sign up, you won't regret it. And if you don't sign up, maybe you fucking will.
Hello, everyone. This is Tyler Hewitt, just coming at you with a little special offer for you. You know, if you're a fan of what we're doing here on the show, then we have, to borrow a phrase from Jerry Holkins, a patron-oriented experience tailored just for you. If you go to
patreon.com/dumdumdice,
you can sign up and get a bunch of special features that we're not really going to make available to anyone else, so do that now. Well, not right now, but, you know.
So, Jocelyn. It's Jocelyn, right?
That's right. Jocelyn St. James. Right. Vampire hunter.
Do you know who we are? You seem to know a fair bit about us, but are introductions in order?
Well, I wouldn't say no. Probably, good manners, you know?
Right. Well, my name's Everett Fry. This here is, Ridley Beef.
You can call me Mr. Beef, you know, I like to keep things professional.
Would you be the one they call, the Riddler?
That's correct. You fucking nailed it.
She nods and, goes on to explain, she does seem, like, legitimately kind of, like, happy that you introduced yourselves. Everett, you get the sense she probably knows who you are, but now that you're actually like in communication, it's nice to actually have a conversation as people and monsters, as it were. Jocelyn is like, right now you're probably wondering why a vampire hunter like myself is teaming up with a couple of kindred. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Right. All right.
Ridley just nods. He's being like the stern, over the shoulder nodding guy, though he's dressed like Don Johnson in Miami Vice with women's sunglasses. So it doesn't have the full effect you'd imagine.
And I was going to say, like, over the shoulder, you mean like at Everett's shoulder, right?
Yeah, he's behind Everett, like leaning against a
around the shoulder.
Fence, so he looks even shorter. Yeah.
Yeah, great. She says,
all right, mates. Well, it's a bit of a complicated story, short version is. Came over here looking to, there goes the accent. You know, it was, I was having a good day, mates, then it turned into a bad day for old St. James family. My husband was killed by one of you, sucked the blood right out of him, had to shoot him in the heart with a stake in him, and then realized that doesn't do it, so I had to chop off his head. Not a great day for me, but taught me a couple of things. He and I, we'd been looking for the kindred for some time, and looking to put a stop to him, and they put a stop to him. So that was a lesson learned. Heard about there was some kind of it turned him real fast. And she goes on to explain that when she was kind of searching the vampire she killed after she hunted him down. She was able to find a couple of vials of what she now knows as Drac on the vampire. And as she continued her quest to dig deeper into kindred society, she learned that he turned real fast. Like, he was bitten and then a couple moments later, like, went after her. And nothing in kindred society suggests that transformation... like, the embrace is not that quick, as you've seen with both Harvey and now Chonky. She began to investigate substances that could do this, different clans that might do this. Obviously, you know, if any of you were proper Camarilla, the fact that she was able to breach the masquerade so effectively is quite concerning. But honestly, Everett, you were kind of on your way to that yourself before you were embraced.
Yeah.
So she explains that she and her husband were kind of like, think if it was just two Xanders in Buffy. Just like a couple of people who realized that there were supernatural things but had no supernatural powers themselves, who kind of set out to try and right some wrongs, and unfortunately came up against the hard side of kindred society.
So, I've got some Drac myself. If you don't mind me stepping in, Everett, I don't want to step on your toes.
The kind of funny thing is, I think every time Drac has come up, Everett hasn't been around. So I think this is all like pretty new information for him. So he's just like, by all means.
Yeah, so I can tell you, they were serving that shit up at the club like nobody's business. So I got fucking 9 vials that I lifted off a boy and sent him out. Is this shit like vampire superpower bullshit? Like, you take it and you fuck his psycho? Because, okay, well, I mean, do you want one to do science on?
You can see that, like, she's, like, legitimately chuffed about this and the fact that you think she might be a scientist. So she's like, well, right, if you don't mind sparing it, it'd be right useful.
Okay, but how are you going to use it? I just want to know in advance, because there's a darker side of this where I picture you going off and taking this and being like, I could kill every vampire ever, and then we have to put you down, and Everett seems to like you.
So no, that doesn't seem to be her intent. She truly does want to study it because basically, as she continues to explain, her investigations led her to what basically almost seems like a drug ring that seemed to have operations in Sydney. But then as she kind of killed her way through that, she discovered that they had international reach. And her search actually brought her to Toronto, or at least she was on her way to Toronto. Because the there were signs of a major Canadian operation, but also she got word through some particularly gruesome kills of the meeting that occurred in the CN Tower. And her goal was to kind of like, oh, well, I may not be able to solve this drug thing, but if I can kill two high-ranking kindred, more the better. Unfortunately, someone got there first. So she arrived kind of on Canadian soil just in time to hear about the CN Tower attack. And as a result, her lead was cut off. So turning back to the drugs, she was able to trace them to the Batista Syndicate operating out of Montreal, which has in turn brought her here. That said, obviously, things are in a bit of a state of flux. As a vampire hunter with some understanding of kindred society, Jocelyn's quite concerned about the power vacuum here in Montreal. The fact that the leader of the Sabbat here, A, had left to go fight in Jenna, but then had died in the CN Tower attack, meant that a bunch of incredibly careless, literally and figuratively bloodthirsty vamps were in full control of Montreal. But also knowing how tantalizing an opportunity that would be for other clans, she basically decided that this would be a good place to kind of lay down stakes, LOL, and set up shop, because any power vacuum like this is going to have bad ramifications. And if Drac is moving through Montreal, the odds of what happened in the nightclub happening elsewhere are very high. So she goes on to explain that based on her observations, if Drac was being distributed in the club, odds are a bunch of kine, humans, took Drac and essentially became feral thin bloods. Now, a lot of this doesn't make a whole fuck ton of sense to either of you, given that you're not particularly well-versed in kindred society as of yet. But I think...
yeah, so you take it and you come out like a crazy shit vampire. Okay.
Yeah, Ridley, you would know from the Notte Nostra that thin bloods are the eventual kind of like fear of kindred society. They're bloodlines, generationally bloodlines that are so far removed from their antediluvian that they're almost not kindred. Like, they're on the line. And as a result... can't pass the blood on because they're literally the blood is thin. So Jenna, the massive war going on in the Middle East with like all the old school vampires, is thought, like, the thin bloods were thought to be the coming of that. If once all the bloodlines are too diluted, that'll be vampire apocalypse. But the world continues to march on. So clearly someone fucked up somewhere along their line. The Notte Nostra would think this is kind of bullshit, but they would warn you that thin bloods are killable like you'd kill a human. Like, they take damage. They can walk in the day. They're basically Gordon Stevenson was a thin blood. Okay. So basically they can walk around in the daytime with like minor irritants, but they also hurt real bad with human weapons even. So all this to say, you'd be warned that A, they're highly ambitious because they want better blood, but B, I think given that you're a bruiser and a murder type there, Ridley, you would know, like, yeah, vampires, you gotta like rip off the head and like really fuck them up. Thin bloods, you can kind of shoot if you need to. But nevertheless, yes, in a nutshell, feral vamps and that turn much faster. They're not strong, but they do turn incredibly quickly.
All right, so yeah, take a vial of this. I guess we can keep an eye out for the source of this one, because I'll tell you, from what I know of the people I deal with, if we've got some sort of vampire underground selling shit drugs that turn people into bloody little psychopaths, I think we should, let's just say, sun the lot of them so that they don't get to do it no more.
Right, yeah. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you both about. You're a bunch of bloodsuckers, not great, but... kind of need your help, and
She kind of like nods to Everett. She's like, and from the looks of this one, y'all need my help too. So what do you say to an alliance of mutual interest?
I say we just need to agree on the long-term goals, because I'd hate to agree on something this week and become enemies next week. That would be so depressing. It sounds like what you're looking for is a little bit of fucking stability. Not psychopaths, not people out there fucking eating women and children left, right and centre. So why don't we, yeah, we can help you take out the fucking scumbag vampires. And at the same time, I think it's in your best interest if you know we started running the city, because then we could enforce the rules in a way that is mutually acceptable. You know,
I was saying, Miss St. James, you're not Inquisition, are you?
No, mate. Kind of doing my own thing. Trust me greatly, but it's what I'm doing.
All the Inquisition we've encountered so far, they work in groups, and you're solo, eh?
That's right. Just me. Yeah. Well, me and me crossbow.
Of course, sure. So, I think Ridley's got a point there that you don't need to play by their rules. You can play by your own. And I think it's in your best interest to form a longer-lasting alliance. Something that can remain beneficial past this job.
Yeah, so basically, she agrees to your terms, because that's basically where her head was at as well, explaining that... of everything she's seen of Kindred Society, your coterie seems to be an odd mix of, like, chaos and, to some extent, some kind of moral underpinning. She's a little bit delighted by the fact that you tried to return the baby rather than eating the baby. Seemed to score you some points.
So much about the rest of vampires.
Yep. But also, I think the fact that you're outsiders... helps a lot. The fact that Iris has been and continues to be a high profile person who sort of throws her weight around, and the fact that like one of you is a cop and one of you is a mobster has given her a degree of comfort in approaching you, because you guys really are kind of like the island of misfit toys when it comes to vampire society. And there's something I think approachable about that, and understanding like, yeah, you don't have a bunch of like, you know, eighth generation vampires over your shoulder being like, oh no, you gotta do it this way. Y'all are kind of on your own.
That's such a wild perspective to take, because I feel like Everett like is looking at the coterie as like a powder keg that's like gonna go off at some point.
Yeah, but Everett's been inside. She's been lurking on rooftops, right, like, yeah. Batman. To Batman, you seem real like a-okay.
I was gonna say, Everett also has no concept of what other coteries are like.
That's true too, yeah.
Well, I mean, she's observed you with, like, Dederick as well. And, like, it, again, just the tone of the coterie seems different than a lot of the vampires she's killed. I mean, seen. Killed. All in all...
So, is he Drac? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Ryan, the only thing I would like from you, though, sir, is because we're moving, as we kind of continue to delve further and further into the system in our adventure, I want to make sure we're also leaning on the dice in a way that we often do with our other systems. Particularly for social encounters. Right up till now, it's been a lot of like Iris Dunn, social fighter, where like it's true. Yeah. Iris with like a fistful of dice dealing with social stuff. But there are a lot of skills that aren't like impress a room full of people with poetry that are like, is she on the level? Can you trust her? How much can she trust you? So for both of you, I'd like you to roll a check to... help solidify this. She seems on the level from what you've seen, but who knows? I would take, in this case, insight, streetwise, or awareness. Not investigation.
I was going to say, is this us figuring her out or us trying to pitch ourselves to her?
Let's say you trying to pitch yourselves to her. She has to decide whether... Again, this is, as you were talking about in terms of compromises, she has to kind of... break some code to...
Cool. I was gonna say, a rarely used skill, would leadership count for this if he's sure. pitching an alliance?
Yeah,
cool.
I'd take leadership, sure.
And then what do you want from attributes?
Leadership and... it depends what you're trying to do. If it's... I think in your case, Ryan, you're on the level. You're literally just laying out what you think is correct. So I would say intelligence, resolve, or composure. Maybe even charisma, actually. I'd say it's probably one of those. And Tyler, for you, again, you're being very earnest. So I would say composure, I think.
Yeah, I'll go with composure for Ridley as well, because I feel like, as opposed to having to really sell her on this idea because the idea is genuine, he just needs to stay put together enough to not seem like an idiot.
Okay. So, sorry, you mentioned it was composure and insight or leadership?
Yeah, Tyler, you can take insight, awareness, insight, leadership, persuasion, streetwise.
I'll do streetwise then.
Okay. I'll let Tyler answer first.
Oh yeah, okay. I'm rolling, but I'm also adding kind of, I'll mention just that there is a dramatically there is I think a willingness to believe her, kind of like just wanting so badly for like a human like did all of this, did like succeeded where I failed kind of thing.
Yep.
So I rolled my regular dice. Now I'm rolling my three hunger dice for the rest of my roll. Because my roll is 6, so here we go. Okay, so that's that's 1, 2 regular successes, and then 2 crits, one of them on a hunger die.
Tom, I also got a messy successy. We have double messy successy!
Well, shit. This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at the Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Megan Miles at Maggie Miles on Twitter, and storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and all of Dum Dums and Dice's logos are by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by Kai Engel, and all our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, that's JAHZZAR. All of their music is available on freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We've also got merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon of Darkness at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. Sleep well, children of the night. Ah, ah, ah. Spooky.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, the Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Olin Anderson, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord Abradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Caitlin O, Zekin X, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.